Jesse, real, six. You're about to talk about your visit, or Belfast visit, to New Zealand.
Yes. It struck me forcibly that it is Scotland upside down. There is Dunedin, of course, which reflects the name of Edinburgh. We called in at Wellington, Dunedin, and a couple of other ports. And it is so like this country, or at least the Scottish part of this country, I was most impressed. And we were able to go to convention or things like dances and theatre and have whaler racing in the harbours. It was a very pleasant visit indeed, and I got to know one or two girls there, and one of them wrote to me for a while, just on a pen pal basis.
What year was that you were in?
This would be 1947. After that, we went back to Hong Kong, and we'd contracted a reportable infectious disease on board. I have no idea what it was. And we had to go into quarantine for 2 weeks. That meant that the ship had to have no contact with anybody else at all. And so we went to a desert island in the vicinity of Hong Kong. And we were able to have whaler racing, ships, sail racing. We went away for 3 or 4 days in a boat to have a picnic on a desert island, and that was real fun. We took a radio with us, and there were about a dozen of us in the boat and some and a tent, and we played on the beach. We went climbing in the up the mountains. And I discovered that I have not got a head for heights. Somebody, one of the other chaps, was good at mountains and led the way. And I was absolutely terrified, just following in his exact footsteps until we got to the top. And then it was all right coming down the other side. We buried our eggs in the sand to keep them to keep them cool. They were hard-boiled eggs. And we buried them in the sand to stop them from going off. We had a keg of beer with us, and we had plenty of beer. There was swimming all day. It was a real basic holiday, which I thoroughly enjoyed.
What was the disease that had caused this period of quarantine?
I never got to hear. The chap was kept in the sick bay. I never got to hear. Talking of the sick bay, I was able to bring my skills to bear again with a chap who had some heavy zinc plates fall on his that were leaning up against the side of the bulkhead, fell and trapped his shin and broke his shin, and I had to make a silver wire with a screw frame to draw the silver wire taut through his heel bone, and then a jack to pull his leg out straight whilst it was set in plaster for it to heal. And that was very satisfying to be able to help him in that way. We came across a Japanese float plane in Fiji, and we pinched the float from the float plane, and two of us asked the captain's permission if we could, and he said yes, you may. We converted it into a little sailing boat with a little mast and a little sail and a rudder, and we could just about sit in this thing and sail it across the harbour. That was jolly good fun.
Was the Belfast really flying the flag at this time?
Yes, we were the flagship of the second cruiser squadron to start with, and then we became the fifth cruiser squadron. And our admiral was admiral of the British Pacific Fleet. After all the big ships had gone home, we were left in charge, as it were. He was a good chap. I've forgotten his name for the moment, but he was a good chap. And he at Christmas, on Christmas Day, he would come round the messes and drink our health. We were one of the last messes for him to visit, and he was decidedly wobbly by the time he came to our mess. And Christmas Day was always a riotous good fun. We decorated it, the mess, with everything we could lay our hands on. We had Christmas turkey and Christmas pudding made by the ships, made in the ship's kitchens. We had a special cinema show. We were able to show the cinema in one of the hangars that I mentioned earlier. We had a special cinema show for that day, and Tombola was always very popular. Out on the deck, we would have 400 or 500 of the ship's crew playing Tombola at once, and it was very entertaining. Another game we would play is Uckers. In the mess, it's Ludo, basically Ludo, and you play Ludo in the mess quite a lot. Interdepartmental sports were held on the quarter deck, and Ludo became Uckers, and you played it with a bucket, and the quarter deck was marked out for a Ludo board with 15 feet square board. And somebody would push the pieces around with a long pole, and you threw your dice from the bucket, and everybody, and when talking, 200 or 300 people would crowd round and cheer their side, or cheer one side or the other on, as the game was played.
Did he have any shows on board, either amateur theatricals or professionals coming aboard?
Not on board Belfast, but the Americans had amenity ships, and these amenity ships stayed on after at the end of the war for a year or two, because the American ships were also tapering off, but still very much in evidence. And these amenity ships were really rather smart. They had cinema, a theatre, they had canteens where you could have a good mosh-up meal. You could record a message home for 1 minute on a little disc, and then post the message home on a 72 RPM record. And that was something I did for my family, but I didn't have a girlfriend to send it home to at that time. So, but the other chaps, especially the married chaps, would make two or three of these and send them. I'm not sure whether it was to two or three of their girlfriends, or one home and one to the girl, and so on.
You talk about the amenity ship.
Yes, a trip to an amenity ship. You could go at 1 o'clock. You could have a meal and see an afternoon cinema show and an evening dancing show by the Ensa or people like that, American people like that, and then have another meal in the evening, record something to send home, have a couple of pints of beer in the evening, and back on board at 9 o'clock. That was a jolly good day out. Other distractions were that you could go to a holiday, a holiday arrangement. You could go up country, as in Australia or New Zealand, when the ship was stationed there, a few days at a time, half the ship's company on one occasion, and then the other half on another occasion. And I was able to go up to Bullawonga in Australia, and the village itself, or town, whatever it calls itself, carried our expenses, and we were lodged in a hotel, and the locals couldn't do enough for us, and it was a very happy few days that we had there. Another trip we did, it was a bit more official. The captain and some officers and a selected number of the crew, of which I was fortunate enough to be one, were accepted in Peking, as it was in those days, the capital of China. And we went up from the harbour of Qinwan Tao in northern China by rail through communist insurgency was in full swing at that time, but we managed to get to Peking by rail, and we spent a few days in Peking. The Americans were very much in evidence because they strongly supported the Chinese, and we were able to go into the Forbidden City and be shown all around the Forbidden City, which is a city that was built by Masons who were subsequently executed, so that nobody knew what the inside of the city looked like. And there are some the tremendous wealth of clocks and gold ornaments and curtains and draperies, I remember. And we had a riotous few days there at the Americans' expense. And coming back wasn't quite so easy because the train line had been cut. And so we had to fly back to the nearest airfield and in a Dakota, sitting on the floor, because it had not been fitted out for passengers, sitting on the floor of this Dakota. And when the Dakota came down to land, I got the most fiendish earache, which lasted for a few hours. There was no connection except the railway back to the Qinwan Tao, and there were no trains, but they managed to get us sitting on one of these up and down maintenance trucks where a chap works a lever up and down like that, and we all put our suitcases on and crowded on ourselves and clung on for dear life whilst this chap whizzed us along the railway line back to the port, back to Qinwan Tao and back to harbour. That was quite an adventure. After, at the end of 2 years, dates escape me now, but there was an insurrection in Malaya, and we were brought down to show the flag and show our guns in Penang, I remember. And we just laid off the coast and discouraged whoever was doing what in Malaya for a bit. And I remember that you could set your watch by the rainstorm that occurred at 5 o'clock every day. You could see it looming over the mountains as we laid off the harbour. And at 5 o'clock down came the rain.
How long were you in Malaya? Or off the coast?
Yes, it was only a month. We were in Penang and then back to Singapore and then up to Penang again. And we didn't actually get involved. I think we were just there as a held there as a threat. And that was the end, really, of our 2 years in the Pacific. We did a self scrub of the bottom. In Singapore the harbour, there was a floating dock, and we put ourselves in the floating dock. The dock came up, and we all went underneath and scrubbed the bottom, and did our routine inspection of the ship, and then came afloat again, and came home as economically as possible because fuel and the costs were very much in everybody's mind in those days.
So you'd been away from the UK for about 2 years.
Yes, two years and a bit. Came back in the early part of 48.
How did you keep in contact with your family? You've mentioned a little bit.
Yes, that and letters. Letters were very important. I had four or five members of the family that I was keeping in contact with in different addresses, and it was always very important that mail kept up with us as not too much time delay. One appreciated that airmail hadn't got into full swing at that stage, and it was coming out by ship, so it was always a month late. But if it caught up with us, that was fine. And mail is now ready for distribution was the call that sticks in my mind. And there was a great cheer went up from the whole ship when that pipe was made. There was a deck on the ship set aside for chief and petty officers, B gun deck. And so when mail was called, everyone would go up on B gun deck, all our people would go up on B gun deck and sit around reading their letters in privacy. Privacy is a very important thing on a ship. You were okay in the part of ship where you worked. You were not welcome in other parts of the ship where other people worked. And so it was an engine room or a workshop, or in my case, the coppersmith shop. That is the place where you could go and be on your own. Or, as I've mentioned, B gun deck is set aside for petty officers for recreational purposes. Sit and read a book or anything like that. And I have known people go down several decks down to where there was an electric motor and sit round behind the electric motor as their place and won't betide anybody who came anywhere near it. And they would set themselves up with their photographs and treasures. Mind you, that was only when the ship was in its quiet periods, so when work was going on, or we were doing exercises or in action, then of course that would all disappear.
So did everybody have their own special spot?
Everybody had their own special spot, and woe betide if you trod on it. My spot was my coppersmith's shop. There was a blacksmith in there as well, but he had his half and I had mine. And if anybody came in to talk to me and give me work to do or take it away or discuss things, that was fine. But otherwise, it was my domain, and when I shut the door, that was me and in my little world.
How did you send mail?
There is a post office on board ship. A mail office on board ship, and you just put it in a slot in the door of the mail office, and it fell into a bag, and then it was sent to the central mail clearing port in Hong Kong, I think it was, and then it was dispatched all around the world from Hong Kong. So you just basically put it in a slot in the mail office.
Mail was censored during the war.
Yes, it was.
Was that the position afterwards as well, or not?
No, there was no censoring at the end of the in the Pacific. But I remember one naughty thing I did on the Belfast in Scapa Flow. My father, as I've already recited, lost his leg in Scapa Flow, and I wrote in a letter to one of my family that we were at the moment in the place where Father lost his leg, and the chaplain who was doing the censoring sent for me and said, I know that nobody knows this other than your mother, but if your mother knows, she might let the cat out of the bag, and you mustn't say things like that. So we had to cross that piece out. But he was good enough to tell me about it and not just cut it out without saying. So yes, there was censoring, but not in the Pacific, not in the Pacific theatre and after the war.
Can I ask you about your memories of the ship's company, of the Belfast? You've mentioned a few names.
Yes.
Before.
Yes.
Especially other artificers, I think you've
mentioned. Yes.
I was just wondering, John, did you have any contact with the Admiral, for example?
No contact with any of the higher officer class. My divisional officer was a very good friend, and he helped me to study for a higher educational certificate, and we spoke about books and that sort of thing. Novels and reading in general. He helped me considerably.
Do you remember his name now?
No, I don't. No. I did sit for the higher educational certificate in Tokyo Harbour, I remember, and I was the only person taking the certificate, so I sat in one of the officers' cabins by myself and took this examination and failed miserably because I hadn't had insufficient preparation. We
other members of the ship's company that you
we had a little trio of us that used to do naughty things. We went ashore drinking together, and on one occasion the other two swung across Singapore dry dock on a rope cable that was strung across the top, and there was no water in the bottom, and they swung across, and they did it successfully. I funked it, and the next night there was some water in the bottom, and they said, "Go on, you show us what you're made of." So I swung across, and I didn't make it, and I fell in. And fortunately, the water was there. I don't think I would have tried it otherwise. And the thing that annoyed me particularly was that my hat sailed away, and I had to swim across and fetch it back and put it on my head as best I could. And when we got back up the gangway onto the quarter deck, the officer of the watch, you had to salute very smartly, and we were standing there, I was standing there dripping and covered in oil, and he just waved me straight away, "Get off my quarter deck." My two chaps' names, one was Roy Fenton and the other was Steve Barker. And they were very good friends, and we kept in touch when we got back to the UK.
Were they both artificers as well?
They were both artificers. A third friend of mine, I can't remember his name for the moment, but it will come. A third friend of mine was a friend of a different sort. We went ashore and we did exploration. We didn't do much drinking or then anything like that. And he kept in touch with me and I with him after we'd come home. And to cut a long story short, I was his best man at his wedding and he was my best man at my wedding. And we talk to each other still to this day. Victor Payne was his name. Yeah. He was an electrical artificer, and he came to be eventually a director of an electrical company. He did very well for himself.
Ask about discipline on board. Was that ever a problem?
Yeah, no, not a problem. It was unspoken There were defaulters and people who'd done minor misdemeanors of leaving something sculling about, or being late at his place of duty, or anything like that. There were minor defaulters, but there was nothing ever serious. And I don't recall anybody in the Pacific camp, in the Pacific era, ever being put in the cells. There was a chap put in the cells when we were in the European theatre, and it was for being rowdy on the mess deck, having had too much to drink, and he was put in the cells, and it was only there for a couple of days. It was nothing very serious. I do recollect, after I left the Belfast, one serious disciplinary offence being, which I'm going to recall now, the chap was guilty of molesting a junior man, a boy seaman, and his case was before the captain. His case was proven, and the assembled ship's company had the charge read out and the fact that it was proven, and then and there his badges were cut off and he was turn right, dismiss and walk away from the service, and you are given your papers with the corner cut off, and you can never produce your papers to have a good conduct ever again. But that's the only really serious disciplinary offence I recall.
Was the Belfast a happy ship?
Very happy. It was highly efficient in the European theatre. It was, if anything, even more efficient in the Pacific theatre, except that that efficiency was never put to the test. Later on in my naval career, I was on a ship which was not so efficient, and it was quite a miserable ship, and it spurred me on to leave the Navy eventually, because I didn't want to be any part of that sort of standard of engineering. I wanted to be part of a higher standard of engineering.
Well, what made it a happy ship, do you think?
Yes, that's a very good question. I suppose that the captain makes a ship a happy ship. He sets the rules, he sets the tone, he requires things to be done this way and that way and the other way, and if he gets it right, it turns out to be a happy ship. Mainly, you have to inculcate a friendly competitiveness between the parts of the ship. And people will develop an esprit de corps with their part of the ship in no other way. And then ships between ships, competitively, is a healthy thing. Providing it doesn't get out of hand. And so there are interdepartmental football matches, inter-ship football matches, rugby matches. I played rugby for the artificers. There's polo out from the side of the ship. The booms are put out from the side of the ship to form goals. And then you swim up and down the side of the ship playing water polo. I was quite good at that. I didn't much like deep sea swimming when I first started, but at the end of a couple of years in the Pacific, I got quite good at it. Deck games like Akers, as I've mentioned before, were very, very much tends towards healthy competitiveness and happy jollification,